This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
The PGA Tour is all systems go, and so is the new show, Early Wedge, on the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Sportsline experts Sia Nejad, Mike McClure, and Eric Cohen alongside myself, Rick Gaiman, Patrick McDonald, and Jason Sobel. Five times per week, the Early Wedge provides the best information for DFS lineups, outright selections, and so much more. Follow and listen to Early Wedge in the Early Edge feed on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
Hey there, everybody. Good morning. Happy Friday to you. Late night. Who's sleepy? Very late night with the Sweet 16, but here we are. We'll get into all of it today on Sports Daily. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Gester, glad to be here with you. As we wrap up the week and get ready for a busy sports weekend, we have all kinds of ways you can get in touch with the program. You can call us the good old-fashioned way at 869-1240. Max Power in studio taking those calls. You can reach out to us on our video streams, which are available on Facebook, YouTube, and X. Of course, thank you to everybody watching us on 12 News Plus, 12 News Connected. And you can listen to us on the Odyssey app, as so many of you do, and you can leave us voice messages there with the little microphone. That's super easy, and we can get to those anytime. Even if it's a day later, if you're listening to us a day later, we can get to those. We're happy to do it. Glad you're here with us, Jacob Albrock, Tommy Gester. Tommy, did you stay up late last night? How late did you stay up?
I didn't make it to the Texas Tech comeback. I saw that this morning when I got up. I tried. I tried as hard as I could. I could not stay up that late. You had more of an excuse than I did. You had enjoyed some beverages earlier in the evening. I just was tired. So
we'll say thanks to Crestview Country Club right off the top here. They wine, big wine tasting last night, which is not my cup of tea.
Not your cup of wine, your glass of wine.
Yeah. But it was good. It was fun. Look, it was impressive.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, like, if you're a wine drinker, these are the kinds of events we tell you about with Crestview, our great sponsor on the program here, because there was a full table of people, this guy that is saying words that I don't know the meaning of and describing grapes and the process and all of this stuff to, there were probably 30, 40 people there. And it was great. Like, I learned a lot about wine. Don't know what I was learning necessarily, but, you know, there were a couple of them I liked, a couple of them I didn't like, drank them anyway, and cleaned up the leftovers from everybody else at the table. So, you know, it was good. It was good.
You are. You're the definition
of a lot of wine.
You're the definition of the Rodney Dangerfield and Caddyshack. Like, you're the guy showing up to Bushwood and, you know, like, just shaking things up a little bit.
Yeah, it was fun. It was fun. I thought one of the wines smelled a little like BO. I don't know that everybody wanted to hear that, but you know, I didn't like that one. I like some of the other ones.
You're not giving that one your ringing endorsement then.
That one was not. Yeah. And it was the most controversial, if you'll like.
Was it a Chardonnay?
Oh man. No, it was red.
Oh, okay.
It was red. But I don't know what. I don't know what kind of red. But it was pretty wild one. But some people like loved it, and some people like me didn't like
that
probably
nearly as much. The BO one was probably, I'm just guessing, the one that your wife liked the most, is my guess.
No. It was even a little.
Because she likes BO. That's not. I'm saying, like, right. I've gone to a wine tasting with her.
She's got a totally different.
Her palate is wet. She loves IPAs. I can't do that.
So I think she liked some of the other ones better. And then there was this like champagne one. It was way too sweet, but man, it was good. And that was cool. Like to learn how that's made and how they get the bubbles in there. Whatever. It was fun. And that's what we're talking about when we talk about Crestview and how much we enjoy it. Those kinds of events, so much more than just going out and playing golf, which is also great, which I really wanted to do yesterday. And I know you'll do this weekend, and I don't think I'm going to have a chance. And like today, I'm like, oh man, I have a chance, but the wind's blowing 25 miles per hour. Maybe I'll just hit the simulator instead. So give Crestview a call. Ask them about those memberships. It's events like that that I think we honestly enjoy as much as anything. It was super fun. And if, you know, the wine drinkers, that was a heck of an event. Just like really high quality, high class stuff. You know, for me, grew up on Franzia out of the fridge in a box. It was a good experience.
Yeah, a little Boone's Farm action. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that at all. That's me and Max out there sipping on the Boone's Farm back in the day. Isn't that right, Max? The Boone's Farm guy.
He's just shaking his head no.
Oh, well, I'll be me by myself then, and that's just fine. All right, so if you did stay up late, which I had a little too much wine to stay up late, I couldn't do it. You got a tremendous ending to the Tech Arkansas game. So I tried to stick with it for Arizona's sake because they were sticking around with Duke, and for Tech's sake because – I'm wanting the Big 12 to do good. I kind of root for Tech. Man, like there was a point where I was like, nope, Tech is going to have one of these unlucky games where a team that cannot shoot is shooting the lights out. And this happens in the tournament and it's a major bummer. And then I was watching Cooper Flagg do Cooper Flagg things. And I'm like, good Lord, like you're just not going to be able to find an answer for him. Well, Arizona kept it close. And then Texas Tech had the crazy one. It was probably about the time I gave up when they made a comeback. It was down like 16 at one point in the second half and 13 with 5 minutes to go. And then finally the law of averages played itself out in that game a little bit. And Arkansas, who was shooting the lights out, they still finished 10 of 25. Like Arkansas, if we just said Arkansas is going to make 10 threes, we thought Tech would be in big trouble. And Tech didn't shoot them very well either. And Tech's a good shooting team. That got flipped around, but I think it tells you how good Tech is that they were still able to stretch that game out. They got it into overtime. They got things settled in. I don't know that people realize, like, Texas Tech doesn't even have one of, if not their best shooter right now, and haven't for a long time. That's how good they are. And they got it done, and I'm really glad they did because I think they're awesome.
Well, they also saved the Big 12 from a disastrous night last night with BYU losing, and then, of course, Arizona losing. It took that massive comeback for Texas Tech to at least get the Big 12 on the board in the first night of the Sweet 16 matchups. There was a lot of offense last night. I mean, basically in every single game, a lot of offense. I mean, Alabama... Come on, 113 Dude. Points. They hit the 100 mark with like 7 minutes to go in the game. It was ridiculous. And BYU shot the ball really well, too. Like, the fact that they put up 88 points and still lost by 25 is wild to me. Just insane.
Well, it's what we worried about with Alabama. Like, BYU got a tough draw, honestly. Like, I would have loved BYU more had they made it to any other region, because they sat there and they stared in the face of Wisconsin early, right? Which they took care of, but Wisconsin, Alabama, Duke, like all these offensive juggernauts. And it's like, well, that's what BYU does. Like you kind of wanted to see them come in and play a team that can't shoot as well. So, but I mean, Alabama, my Lord, 25 of 51.
Yeah. Right. Really?
We don't ever see that. Yeah. That's like,
it was like an NBA game. It looked like an NBA game last night out there. And I'm watching now, all the games had great offenses, but I'm watching the BYU Alabama game. And I'm like, I'm just thinking about Kansas as the preseason number one. I'm like, man, like they would have gotten blown out of the water. It's a different brand of basketball entirely. With any team, like any team that played
Duke
last night,
would have gotten blown out of the water.
Yeah, well, like, my point is that it's a completely different brand of basketball than what the Jayhawks had been playing this entire year versus honestly any other team that was playing last night. It was kind of refreshing to see like big offenses last night.
25-30 record, 35-year-old record. And I thought Tech was going to run into the same sort of buzzsaw, but they didn't. They got it done. They represent the Big 12. We'll talk about the rest of it. We'll talk about the Royals opening day. Don't go away.
It's time to get back to the sports talk.
All right, let's do this thing. Go!
Sports Daily is on KFH.
Hello, young lovers. Won't you try some good cold Boone's Farm Strawberry Hill?
Oh, how nice.
Boone's Farm Strawberry Hill. It captures the taste of fresh strawberries. Now, doesn't that wine taste good?
You're right, Grandma.
Precious.
Where'd you go?
Look, she left the Strawberry Hill.
And it's Strawberry Hill forever.
See that, Tommy? It's fact. They made a commercial about it.
I love Max Boone's Farm. I've always loved Boone's Farm.
Max messages me about Boone's Farm. He's like, it's kind of, you know, it's kind of, what did you call it, Max? It's kind of funny and dumb. And yeah, I'm like, well.
Takes off on a Harley, kind of, like Evel Knievel.
Yeah, funny and dumb kind of fits us, fits this show. If we, you know, if we died tomorrow and people are like, oh, they had this radio show, it was really kind of funny and dumb, I'd feel like we've done our jobs. So there you go. No Boone's Farm last night, only the finest wines, I'm sure, at Crestview, at the wine tasting. I didn't even know, when this got signed up, I didn't know Tommy and his wife weren't going to be there. And I'm like, you're going to send me in there by myself with my wife? She's going to hate me. But I did good.
Good.
Did fine.
I'm glad. I mean, the last wine tasting, I have to say, I went with my wife and your wife. So, and you didn't go. So this is kind of retribution, kind of payback.
Yeah, no, it's good. It was good. Let's talk a little Royals baseball here, Tommy. We'll go back to basketball. We'll look ahead. We've got Jalen Thompson also to talk Royals in the second hour, a Royals insider. It was also opening day. We briefly touched on the basketball yesterday, but it was opening day. I mean, for all that celebrate, it was opening day, right? That was a frustrating one for the Royals, who put themselves in position. A Vinny Pasquantino bomb. You'd have liked to see more offense manufactured. They certainly had their chances late, and they did not take advantage. But I found it pretty interesting that when we talked yesterday and all off season about this rebuilt bullpen and how everything's looking great, it's Zerpa and Long, two of the older guys that can't get it done for the Royals. Now, Long, it's not fair because he comes in extra innings and they get the ghost runner. I don't ever hold that really against relievers anymore. But Zerpa, one dang pitch, Tommy, one pitch. And it's just like, all right, there that goes. I thought Reagans was fine. He had a little bit of bad luck in a couple of spots early in the game. But all in all, it's not that big a deal, a 7-4 loss to the Guardians. I did think it was funny. I was like, man, It had to be one of the old bullpen guys.
Well,
I just had to remind us.
I know it was his very first pitch. It wasn't a bad pitch. It wasn't. And, you know, so that was a little bit of bad luck, I think, for Zerpa. Also, I felt like, you know, I hate on opening day criticizing, you know, Matt Quatrero and the use of the relievers and all of that.
It was a fine place to use Zerpa. They got to use Zerpa this year.
That's not my point. My point is that I wish that they would have not brought Reagans back out to start the sixth. I wish they would have started the inning with Zerpa if they were going to go to the pen, because, you know, Reagans was fine through five innings. He wasn't fantastic, but he was fine. But after five, you know, I'm kind of like, all right, like it hasn't been like a stellar outing for Reagans, and five innings is good, and he's been able to keep him, you know, in the ballgame and with the lead and all of that. Like, at that point, you have this like stacked bullpen that you love, that you're really optimistic about, that have tons of reinforcements. On opening day with your starting pitcher that hasn't been, like, I think it's fair to say he didn't have his best stuff. He was okay, but didn't have his best stuff. I think five innings is good, and then you go to the bullpen after that. I wish they wouldn't have brought him back out for the sixth because, you know, you have no outs, and then you have runners on, and then Zerpa comes in, first pitch, gives up that home run. That was unfortunate.
And it was to a guy that you don't expect to do it. I don't want to read too much into it again, but I do think we're still certainly going to look at this glass half full. Urshig, Harvey, and Estevez were great. And, like, that's some combination of that looks most likely to be how the back end of games will finish. I think the biggest question will be, how does it get deployed to get to that, right? Because, again, we've talked a million times, like, to expect what we got out of the starting pitching last year again this year, it's unreasonable. Like, that is unreasonable to expect that. Maybe they can, but it's just not very likely. And so there are going to be a lot of games probably where you have to get to the seventh inning and your starter's going to give you five. Now, what do you do in that spot? And I think that will be the interesting thing to see out of the bullpen. Like last night, for example, with the runner on, when they did make the decision, is that the spot that you use Urshig, right? Is Urshig strictly going to go later, or is Urshig just going to always inherit base runners, right? Like, or mostly inherit base? I think that's a question they'll have to ask. I think, you know, they've got plenty of lefties back there, which is what they were trying to do last night. So it's like, okay, they still have MacArthur. They still have plenty of arms to utilize that way. That part of it will be very interesting. And we'll talk to Jalen Thompson about that, see if he got any indication in the spring. I don't think he did, but maybe he has an idea based on what's being said in the locker room. But that'll be the way. But, and Rick points this out, and I agree, Rick. Blame base running, not bullpen.
That was a huge blunder. That was a huge mistake.
Royals had their chances at this thing. I was more discouraged by the lack of run production than I was a pitch that got out on Zerpa, because the Royals had plenty of chances, and outside of Vinny Pasquantino, they couldn't do anything with them.
Well,
right?
they would have won the game, you know, had there not been, in my opinion, had there not been that base running blunder with Darren Blanco and Kyle Isbell. I mean, there's no way you can turn that into two outs. And that wasn't like the Guardians did anything amazing. That was a mistake by Kyle Isbell. Honestly, Blanco probably shouldn't have taken off, you know, on contact. But the two mistakes right there, like on opening day, you can't have that. You can't have those kind of mental mistakes.
There's nobody out.
Right, exactly.
Right? You didn't need to do that.
Right, 100%.
And so that's the more, and it's not even just that. That sucks too. But like Jonathan India was terrible yesterday at the plate. 0-for-5, left four dudes out there. I can't have that for the new leadoff hitter, right? You got to be better than that. You got to do something. You got to be productive. That's why he's there. At least he'll be productive, right? Get on base. So those types of little things, Bobby Witt Jr. struck out three times. Salvador Perez struck out twice. Like, those are the things, the reason the Royals lost the game. Vinny Pasquantino was great, though, which was great to see. And it's one game, and it's not that big a deal. And
he looks
yes,
healthy.
There are little things to take out of it. So the Royals get into that weird thing here where you – and it's mostly the outdoor stadiums, I think, that do this. Baseball builds in basically a, oh, crap weather moment. So they don't play today. And they do that so that if something happened yesterday, they could have moved it to today. But they won't play today. And then they'll play again Saturday and Sunday, both afternoon games. So we'll we'll keep our eye on that. But, you know, all in all, it was a good energy, I thought. I mean, Tommy, we've skipped the elephant in the room here. And I have found myself in the minority on this, and I can't believe it. Those hats.
Oh, I love them. I think they're phenomenal. Oh. I think they're great. I loved the all powder blue look. I love the
all powdered blue.
I love the white hats, with the throwback logo on it. I'm a fan of that fit. I think it's fantastic.
I love the all powder blue. Those hats suck.
No, they don't. Like they're awesome because they've got
They don't fit anybody right. The logo's too small. What are they anyway? Like, why do we need alternate hats in baseball? We don't need alternate hats in baseball. Like, the Royals have a great hat, and that regular hat would have looked great with those powder blues. What are we doing with it? If you want to do that hat in like a City Connect thing, fine.
I think it looks amazing because I love
the Dodgers, the Yankees. They're running out alternate hats.
No, but the Dodgers certainly were wearing their golds last night.
Well, that's what every champion.
Well, I'm telling you, this is the world that we're in where you're going to have alternate everything. And I'm willing, even if I thought those white hats weren't great, which I actually do like them, but even if I thought they weren't great. But that was the trade-off, wear those white hats to get the all-powder blues. Count me in. Like, I will make that sacrifice.
Just wear the blue hats.
I don't know. Why don't you just wear a powder blue hat then? Like, they've got powder blue hats.
Wear a powder blue hat. Yeah. They also wear that hat. They have that hat.
But I kind of do like it, and it's really that throwback logo. I love that throwback logo with, you know, the Kauffman crown and the bat. Like, I love
it. It's not big enough.
I love it.
It's not big enough. It looks small on the hat. I will say this, and I will concede this as an olive branch to all those people that think I'm crazy, because I might be the only one on this. The helmet looked pretty good.
Helmet looks really good.
The helmet looked better.
Yeah.
So I think it's something physically with those particular hats that's bothering me, because I thought the helmet actually looked okay. So maybe that's what it is. I just, like, that uniform would be perfect with just the regular Royals hat, though. Like, it would look, if you want to wear the hat they wore yesterday, wear it with on a Sunday afternoon with a blue jersey or something. It looks like a spring training hat is what it looks like.
I like it.
I don't know.
I think it's really good. A couple other points with the game yesterday that I think are important to point out. You mentioned Lucas Ursig going back to the bullpen. I thought that I know that it's one game and it's hard to know exactly what the plan is for him. But if it continues, if this sort of trend continues, I like the usage of where Matt Quatrero is deploying him, because it was clear it wasn't about, in my opinion, necessarily runners on base or leverage situations. Quatrero wanted Ursig to face the best hitters in the Guardians lineup. And, you know, so like that's when he came in. He came in the seventh and he took on the heart of that lineup for the Guardians. And so if that ends up kind of being that trend where it's like, look, it doesn't matter what inning it's in. If we're going to the bullpen, if it's the heart of the lineup, if it's the guys that are going to do the most damage, that's where we're going to deploy Lucas Ursig, whether that's in the sixth or maybe even the ninth or anywhere in between. That's what we're going to do. And so I do like that, because it wasn't like it was like a high leverage situation necessarily with runners on base and scoring position and things like that. It was like, hey, go get out the top guys in their lineup. And that's what he was able to do. Also, Bobby Witt Jr., you mentioned how he didn't have a great game, and he didn't. He struck out three times. But if it wasn't for him, the Vinny Pasquantino home run wouldn't have happened. He beat out a throw earlier in that inning to extend the inning. It was a ground ball, the shortstop, and he hustled down the line, was safe, and then that set up the Pasquantino home run. So, I mean, that was key for him. And then the thing about Bobby Witt Jr. that we love is that he's impacting the game even when he's not producing well. Like, even when he's not doing the big things, hitting the home runs and doing all of that, like, he is still impacting the game in positive ways.
He's, and a shortstop always will. There was no chance that dude was throwing him out on that play. And that's what you have in your back pocket with Bobby Witt Jr. Like, you can see that pretty, not, I don't want to call it a routine ground ball, but like, you, like, second he hit that, you're like, duh, he's safe. Like, they have no chance to get him out there. And I agree with you on that. I don't want to overreact to anything. Ursig is interesting. Ursig was always going to be one of the most interesting players on this team, because he was electric last year. He was awesome down the stretch. And I do agree. It is an interesting way to use him. And I like it too, to put him in not just in the, you know, the stickiest situation, but against the other team's best hitters. We got to remember that, though, with him, because when you're constantly going up against the team's best hitters, like, you're going to get got some. And I think it works with him, because I think his the mental component of his game is strong. And he, that's a part of what makes him so cool. So that's it. That's yeah. I mean, I'd be on board with it too, because I think he can handle it. You know, you don't want to put guys out there with that chance. You know, baseball, especially with pitchers, it can get in your head. Doesn't seem like that's going to happen with him. So I'm with you. Like, if that's the way they want to use him too, it's fine. I don't care if they use him in the third inning, Tommy. Like, I don't care where they use him. Just use him, right, in those spots. Leave the back end stuff to the other two, to Harvey and Estevez. But if you're going to use Urcic that way, then who's the other guy? I think the same question still lingers. Who is that other guy that's going to step up? And maybe Quatraro just uses Urcic there, right? Like, maybe he does just make it those three guys. But if he is going to pull Urcic into different spots, who becomes that next piece that they need? We know who their lefty specialists are. Is it James MacArthur?
No, I think it's Zerpa. I think it becomes Zerpa in that regard. And who else are you going to look at? I'm not going to trust MacArthur in those situations.
I might trust MacArthur early on in the sixth inning or the seventh inning. Zerpa, I think, becomes more of a specialist. Maybe it's Schreiber. Schreiber was really good last year.
I'd be
year
okay with Schreiber. Yeah, I'd be all right with that.
They didn't use him yesterday.
Might be Lynch. I mean, Daniel Lynch, you know, was really, really good to end the season. I know you don't like Daniel Lynch. You're shaking your head at me.
No, I like Daniel Lynch.
If you go back and you look at the way Daniel Lynch pitched the last 2 months of the season out of the pen, he was outstanding, like nearly flawless. And so if that's something that can continue, you know, then he might be that guy.
It's not that I don't like Daniel Lynch. I really do like Daniel Lynch. It's that we've got a long, you know, we've got a long track record with Daniel Lynch. You know, he was much better last year.
He was really good.
But he only pitched in like 16 games.
He was in the minors, and they bring him up.
No, I know.
Out of the pen, and he does really good down the stretch for them.
You're misunderstanding. This is not like, I think Daniel Lynch is great, and I think absolutely he could be that guy. But if you think, and I think this, and I'm pretty sure you do, if you think Daniel Lynch has to be your next option as a starter, you kind of have to leave him in long relief for a little while at least. And that's fine too, because that's an important role. And at least at that point, it lets you kind of see like what he's got now over. I just don't think it's necessary yet to go and put him in the Bubich role of last year. Cause I think that became a desperation move. I don't think they need to do that yet with Lynch, because I agree with you that in an absolute best case scenario, Lynch is a starter for this organization. Like, that's the best case for them. So him being in long relief right now and sort of the backup to the rotation, which they're going to need at some point, still makes the most sense for me for him. Now, over the course of this season, if they have a clear need back there and he's been pitching effective in long relief, like, yeah, put him back there. Like, as if that's what they needed. I just don't think that's what they need yet on, you know, after game one of the season. I think he's got to be still your backup plan at starter.
Yeah, I mean, I get that, and I do think that he's got the chops to, you know, be at least a competent starter in the rotation for the Royals. You know, they're going to have options. If they need, and at some point during the season, they are going to need a spot starter or somebody to fill in or whatever, and they've got options. You know, they've got Lynch, and then, you know, assuming health, if they can get down the season a little bit, you've got Alec Marsh that should be healthy at some point. Kyle Wright is working his way back from injury, and they've got a couple of other guys in the minors that they didn't be put on the major league roster that I think they like a lot too, that could potentially come in and be, you know, a spot starter type guy. So they don't have as much depth as they did last year in the rotation, but they still do have some depth. I don't disagree with you that the best place for Lynch is to be that long reliever and try to be the guy that, you know, can give you what you need if a starter gets in trouble or whatever. But my point is that if they have to have him in more of a high leverage late inning situation, like middle late inning, sixth inning or whatever, I think he's fully capable of doing that.
We're going to talk to our Royals insider, Jalen Thompson, about all of this here pretty quick. He'll come up in the next hour. We'll get his thoughts on opening day. What should we be taking away? I don't think a whole lot. I think it is what it is. They had a couple of goofs out there, but man, the good news, like the energy was high. I think this is going to be a special year. I think the fans are just like all in with this team, this organization right now. And I think that's super fun. We also got a slight bit of news from John Sherman that we haven't mentioned yet, that he kind of said they're going to lay out their plan for the ballpark this summer in June or July. So, you know, the speculation that's happened over the last week, I guess I didn't really expect one way or the other and a concrete decision at any particular point, but it sounds like we're going to get one this summer, which is pretty exciting for that organization. Tommy, the basketball was pretty good last night. I think, you know, you had the early session. Like, you can look at it two ways. You saw history with Alabama, you know, a 35-year-old record, the 25 threes. Maybe that's interesting to you. I'd rather see the closer games. And then Florida handled Maryland pretty easily. So I was like, oh, okay. Like, that's not good. The SEC's flexing on everybody a little bit. But then I do think that evening session was fantastic. Arizona would not go away against Duke, even with Cooper Flagg looking like the best player on the planet and all of these things. He is so stinking good. But so was Caleb Love. A nice little ending for him. That was a good game. And then, of course, we briefly mentioned on the Tech game, which was wild and crazy and outrageous and fun. But it was a good night of basketball. The night session redeemed us. It was on too late. I don't know why. I mean, I guess it has to be on that late, but man, that's late basketball for college basketball, especially.
I mean, I think that every team that won last night has a legitimate chance to win a national championship. There wasn't a winner last night that I looked at and watched their game and thought, I don't know, they're going to have a tough time getting past X, Y, and Z. Like, I think there's a legitimate chance for all four of those teams moving on. Alabama was the most impressive out of all of them. Sure. And that doesn't take anything away from Duke, but we know about Duke. Like, what Duke did, Duke has done almost all season. So, like, it's almost, you're kind of used to it by now. Alabama has been rock solid for a long time, but they've been a little bit more under the radar this year. They're not a one seed. They're a two seed. They stumbled a little bit in the course of the regular season. And I've always been a fan of Nate Oates. In fact, I'm on that bandwagon of when the day comes that Bill Self retires, I hope that Kansas calls Nate Oates, because I think his brand of basketball is outstanding and so electric, so explosive, so much fun to watch. And I think he'd be a big winner in Lawrence, but that's kind of a side note. But I've always been a big fan of his. I thought they looked incredibly impressive, and they're a team that I'm not sure going into the game last night against BYU. Remember, I had BYU in my Final Four. I'm not sure a lot of people saw Alabama as a legitimate national title contender before last night. I think people thought they were really good, but maybe a step down from those teams that we've been talking about for so long about potentially winning a national championship. And I think they put it on full display last night that they can go win the championship.
If they shoot like that, they'll beat anybody anytime. Just knowing they're capable of it is something everybody has to think about now.
They're not going to get the benefit of the doubt to just sneak up on somebody from here on out.
No,
you put up 113 in a Sweet 16 game against BYU, who also is a really good shooting team and just a good team in general. You're not sneaking up on anybody from here on out.
Absolutely not. And they've been that, you know, when they beat Auburn, whenever that was, kind of toward the end of the season, right? I don't remember exactly when it was. It's like, okay, like they're legit here. I liked them in the tournament. I thought about putting them in, but it was, you know, the kind of Duke is in their way. So it's like, maybe not. We do have an early line on that game, by the way. We have an early line on these games. Alabama's a 6.5-point dog against Duke. Tech is a 6.5-point dog against Florida. So those are your two lines right now. I kind of like both of the dogs a little bit, just off the hip here. I don't know. Man, that is really hard on Alabama Duke. Duke's floor feels way higher than Alabama's, but Alabama's ceiling might be the highest in this tournament. So take that for what it's worth, but I'm with you. Any of those teams can win. And that's the way it should be. They're 1, 2, 3 seeds. Like that's, you know, that's the way it should be. I wish Tech could get fully healthy. That, you know, they've been very successful, even not fully healthy. Man, McMillan is such a good shooter. Like, get him back in there. But he's from, I think I read, he's from San Francisco and still couldn't get out there and play last night. So it's unlikely, I would think, maybe in the Final Four if they're able to get there. So then that takes us to the games today, Tommy. Ole Miss, well, we haven't talked about Florida.
Yeah, I want to talk about Florida because you mentioned how high
Florida
the ceiling is.
Loves that.
Yeah, I think how high the ceiling is for Alabama. I think maybe slightly underneath Alabama as far as a high ceiling is concerned. It's probably Florida.
I think the floor is much higher than Alabama's.
You think the ceiling for Florida is higher than Alabama?
I think the floor right. is higher.
I think the ceiling is right beneath. I think it probably goes Alabama, Florida, as far as ceiling is concerned. They were really impressive, and they have been all season long. They've had, and this kind of goes along the same lines with Bama as well, to an extent, is that there are so many teams in the SEC that you can kind of lose track or lose count a little bit. They can kind of fly under the radar. And I think Bama and Florida are the two teams from the SEC that, you know, are getting slept on. People talk about Auburn all the time. And, you know, of course, Kentucky's always been there. In fact, there was more attention paid to John Calipari in Arkansas in the Sweet 16 than there was to Florida in the Sweet 16, right? And so I do think that does help the Gators a little bit, and they looked great last night. I mean, they were able to pull away from Maryland, and it was a really solid performance.
I was telling somebody the UConn game had just finished, and Florida found a way to get it done in that game. And I was like, everybody else ought to be real upset that UConn didn't pull that off, because that's probably the only time for Florida to do that in this tournament. And, you know, pound for pound, they're probably – I don't know where it ended up odds wise, but pound for pound, they're the next closest to Duke, I think. Now you and I have Houston in there for a lot of reasons, right? But if we're just talking about on paper walking into the gym, Florida's probably right there behind Duke. If there's a team being slept on and I'm sleeping on them too, I think it's probably Auburn. I think for the number one overall seed to not be anybody's champion. I mean, have you seen a soul that has picked Auburn to win this championship?
I have not. No, like
they're the number one overall seed.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, and I don't like. I got them into the Final Four, but that was strictly because, like, if they would have ended up in a region with any of these other teams that we're talking about here, I would have had them in over Auburn, whether it be Alabama or Texas Tech or whether it's Tennessee as a two. Like, had they ended up with any of them, I would have put them in over Auburn. So I'm with the masses on Auburn, but Bruce Pearl's pretty good at this, and he's got a ton of talent on that team. And that's the team I think that's being slept on, and that's the team, honestly, that I think easily of all of these teams has the easiest path to the Final Four. Of all the teams we're talking about, When you have to get through Michigan and Michigan State, potentially, no, you know, I guess I shouldn't put Michigan State in there. I shouldn't put that cart before the horse.
Ole Miss has been playing really, really well.
Yeah. So whether it's even if it is Ole Miss, though, whether it's Ole Miss with 11 losses, yeah, Michigan State or Michigan, like, it's always been that the path for Auburn seems the easiest out of all these teams. Like, look at who, like, if you, let's say, you know, let's just assume, right, that it's in the Houston regional, that it's Tennessee, because I think Tennessee's outstanding. For Houston to have to go through, like, I'll take Auburn's path over all of these teams. Duke doesn't want to play Alabama right now. You think Florida wants to play Texas Tech? Texas Tech, kind of like Florida in the UConn game. Texas Tech, you just saw probably Texas Tech's worst offensive game. Like, they couldn't do anything early on in that game, and they still came back and won that game. So it's really interesting that those two teams match up, because I think they both survived games in which they didn't play up to their standard. And that's probably the only time we're going to see them do that.
And I don't want to hear anything from anybody about, you know, the lack of Cinderellas and, it, you know, it's ruining the game and how, you know, how the tournament has not been fun and blah, blah, blah. Those were high level college basketball games last night, all four of them. And honestly, like the parity amongst a bunch of teams is unlike what we've had recently. Like, you go back to last year, everybody knew UConn was going to win the national championship. They were a buzzsaw, and they ran through everybody, and nobody really challenged them. And, yeah, there were some other storylines here and there, but it was the UConn show. There are, I mean, what, like, out of the Sweet 16, I mean, going back even before those games tipped off last night, out of those 16 teams, there are probably 10 legitimate national title contenders. If not more, 12 maybe, you know, and like the four that moved on last night. And then, you know, you look at the four games tonight. I mean, like, I don't know if we would call Ole Miss a legitimate national title contender right now. I don't know if we'd call Purdue a national title contender right now. But other than that, maybe Michigan.
Call Michigan. Now, the way Michigan's been playing, played through the Big Ten tournament, I absolutely think Michigan's good.
All the other teams playing tonight and the four teams that moved on last night, every single one of them can stake a claim to win a title. And that, to me, that is what this is all about and why I love it so dang much. I would rather watch that than watch a dominant UConn just beat the brakes off of everybody.
Right, I would too. And I think every tournament like takes on its own life, which I like. I don't want them all the same. But this entire season, we have wondered, until Duke really hit its stride late, I think most people thought Duke was best team in the country, but most of this year, we've been like, who is the best team in the country? Auburn's up there, but everyone's like, yeah, but I don't really think it's Auburn, right? And then there were people like us who were like, Houston is built for this. Houston's going to be really hard to beat. Like, we have debated. There was a time where Tennessee looked like the best team in the country. There have been times where Florida looked like the best team in the country. There have been times where Alabama had massive wins this year. Like, it's gone back and forth a lot this season. And I think that's what we're getting in the tournament, to your point, and why this particular tournament is so interesting, is because it really does feel pretty representative of what this season was. There are some years where the chaos scenario, just a couple of years ago, where San Diego State, FAU, where you had all these wacky teams in there, at least by seed, like, there are years where that's super fun for the tournament too. None of those teams, FAU with the exception, how do you define Cinderella becomes a thing, but none of those teams were outrageous, right? But it was just that kind of year, right? It was the very early parts of the portal and players were moving around and it was hard. So I think each tournament gets to take on its own life. It's just so rare that we get actual Cinderellas in this far into the tournament anyway. So rare. So rare. Wichita State, when they made the Final Four, I think some people you might be able to call. If you're calling any mid-major a Cinderella, then yes, there have been those. But if you're looking at like teams that are truly unexpected, and that Wichita State team that made the Final Four, didn't they win the NIT the year before and like bring everybody back?
Yeah.
So should that really have surprised everybody? No, it'd be like Colorado State this year. I think when you're talking about, like, at least for me, it's the teams that had to win their conference tournament to get there. Like those teams, and they just almost never get this far into the tournament. So let's enjoy these high-level teams and games. I'm totally with you. We'll preview the games. We'll make some picks. We'll talk a little more baseball in the next hour. More Sports Daily coming your way.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily here on KFH. We are glad to be with you on a Friday of more great sports action. The rest of the Sweet 16 games coming your way. A little more Major League Baseball. Not everybody playing today, but some games are today. I'm hoping to be able to watch the Texas Rangers today. Tommy, did you see what's going on with MLB TV yesterday?
No, I didn't. I mean, were you able to get in?
Oh my goodness! Like they had a massive outage for about an hour.
Oh wow! Like, no, I missed that.
So we're sitting there with it yesterday, and before the game starts, I've got it on. We're watching. I got the Royals up because you know we have cable in the newsroom, and I'm watching it. One of our producers, who's a huge Twins fan, comes over and he's like, "Oh, are you able to watch that?" And I was like, "Yeah, it's been fine." He's like, "I can't get it to pull up," and I was like, "Well, let me see if it's just the Twins feed." So I click over there and it doesn't work. And I'm like, oh yeah, it's not working for me either. And I try to go back to the Rangers game and I get the spinny wheel of death. And I'm like, oh no. And he's like, I'm so sorry. I'm like, it's okay. It's not your fault. And so I do a quick search. Yeah, they were out. Mm. Like they were out at the beginning of the games, probably until the third or fourth innings of most of them. And people were losing their minds. And I'm like, yeah, you thought Netflix had it bad? Try being the league that can't get its product to people on opening day after it makes them pay like $150 for it.
It's not cheap to be an MLB TV subscriber. Woo! So I would be mad too. I mean, I guess that's one benefit, of the Royals. Like we can't watch them through MLB TV. I was watching the Royals through FanDuel Sports Network. And so I didn't have, like, the Braves and Royals were playing at the same time. So I didn't have both games on. Otherwise, I would have been on MLB TV, and I wasn't.
Oh, you wouldn't have been watching the beginning of that game.
Yeah, true.
I was just like, what a lot like that. How would you like to be in whatever room that is where it's opening day, and you're like, Mr. Manfred, I got some bad news. All those people that are paying $150 to watch baseball – they can't watch it right now. You know, it'd be one thing if it was like July 27th and they had an outage and it was like, all right, yeah, whatever. I'll go do something else. No, this is opening day. Like you've got everybody playing hooky or sneaking away in to try and watch it at work or whatever it is that they're doing. And like, why? I paid $150 for this. Oh man, it was bad. And it took a while. Like it was pretty, it took about an hour, I think, for them to get in. And
think they'll give any refunds? Because I can't imagine they'll give any refunds.
Yeah, we need one fraction.
It's like that'd be about a dollar, right? I mean, it's $150.
Little
162
less, yeah.
Games. Give me a dollar back. Like, let me go get a McChicken or something with that.
Yeah, it's just oh man, and of course their social media, which I'm sure all this stuff is scheduled. How are you watching today? Where are you watching today? And everyone's like, we're not. Jackass, we can't watch your expensive app. It was funny. It wouldn't have been funny if they didn't get it back on, but you know they eventually did, and we got there. You know the way that the Royals are going to be watched is kind of the same as it has been. We haven't really talked about this. This is really cool this year. KWCH and KSCW, we're broadcasting 10 Royals games this year. We have 10 games on the air. Isn't that wild? Next Sunday's day game will be on broadcast television.
I love it.
Through local TV.
I love
local
it.
TV.
Tony Dusing, our operations manager, and I were talking about it yesterday about how, at least for now, I think eventually it's going to change with Major League Baseball. It's going to have to change through collective bargaining, all of that. But, you know, it's really difficult for people in Wichita to be able to consume the Royals for free. Like, really difficult. You can do it on KFH on the radio. Through the Odyssey app, so you can get the audio for free, but at least watching it outside of, you know, what KWCH and KSCW are doing, you have to have a subscription, and blacked out. Like, you've got to have a cable subscription, you've got to have, you know, do this Prime Video add-on, or MLB TV, or whatever it is, and there are blackouts, and there are all these other things. It's really hard for a town 3 hours away, 3 hours away from Kansas City, to be able to consume these games.
And it is a problem for baseball, too, by the way. Like, it's a wide-ranging problem, though. I don't know. I love, and we've seen this some with the NBA too. We aired Oklahoma City Thunder games this year on the KSCW. I don't know that any of those made it, but like, it would be super cool if some of these games on the more, you know, the NFL will never do this, but for basketball and for football, I mean, for basketball and for baseball, if local television is able to pick up some of these packages and sort of like college sports, it's like, well, what channel are they playing on today? Like, we're used to doing that.
Yeah.
That's what we do. Like, oh, today's game's on ESPN, or oh, today's game's on local TV, or to, and you know, for, I think it's doable because the broadcast teams are more a part of the organization than they are these networks they work for. Like, you saw everybody that's still on the Royals broadcast, they just had FanDuel Sports Network mic flags, right? Like, it's not like anything changed.
Right.
So, yeah, I think breaking it up probably makes some sense for baseball, or Major League Baseball just takes it all on themselves. And that's where you see something like you saw yesterday, like, well, that ain't going to work. But not everybody wants to pay $150 to get all the games. Then you might just want all the Royals games. And so trying to figure out a way to do that for teams. And then there's the other part of it. You think the New York Yankees or the Dodgers want to, you know, want to have the same deal that the Royals have?
Absolutely not. They make so much more money on their own network.
That's what, and that is what makes it difficult, I think, for baseball. Like, what is it? I think in the end, like, you just don't black out MLB.tv and you've got it solved. And I think that, I think at some point, if you're Major League Baseball, you just have to tell the networks, like, look, guys, I know that, you know, you want exclusive rights and you want blackouts, but if somebody's willing to pay that kind of money to watch games, we're not blacking them out anymore. We're not going to do that, because I don't know this, Tommy, but I would imagine that there aren't a lot of people that carry a Cox subscription, for example, just so that they can have Royals games. Like, I think if you didn't black people out through MLB.TV, you'd have more people do MLB.TV and you'd have no less people get that network, however it is that they get it, whether it's through DirecTV or Cox or whatever it is, AT&T, I don't think that's going to impact that. We're not making our TV subscription decisions based on that. We're just not.
Yeah, one of our great listeners, Chris, hit us up on X, and he says that he's an MLB TV subscriber. He's a Dodgers fan, so he can watch the Dodgers games. He said he'd pay a little bit extra to be able to watch the Royals for every team, every game. My opinion, and I get where you're coming from, Chris, I'm already paying $150. Give me the Royals as part of it. We're 3 hours away. Like, I'm already paying $150 to watch the Braves, that's my team, and, like, you know, other games or whatever. We're 3 hours away from Kansas City. Don't black us out from Kansas City. That's ridiculous. I understand potentially in the market, like in the actual primary market. But if you're going to do something, if Major League Baseball is like, we have to have blackout restrictions in some capacity, all right, fine. Black out the actual city. Don't black us out 3 hours away. That's ridiculous.
Right. Well, and look, if you're baseball, like if you took away the blackouts, you're going to have a bunch more subscriptions. Just take a portion of that to, like, whoever your broadcast partner is. Just give them, like, okay, we're going to lift this blackout because it's the right thing to do for our fans. And for the customers who are watching in the blackout zone, like, we'll come up with a formula to kick some of that back to the broadcast partner. Because if you're MLB, like, you're getting more than you would have gotten. And if your concern is your broadcast partner, which I can respect that, then find a way to do it. But what you can't do is have the fan be the last person you're thinking about. And the way we watch baseball right now, that's been the case for a long time. Like, MLB extra innings on DirecTV is not that's not keeping up with the times. You have to come up with something, some other way for people to watch unrestricted games, right? Totally unrestricted. And you don't have, like, a, you know, blacking out somebody on the NFL Sunday Ticket makes sense because they can also, everybody can watch it on regular TV, right? You get blacked out from watching Chiefs games if you had Sunday Ticket because you can turn on KWCH and watch Chiefs games. With the Royals getting blacked out, like, I don't have another option. And this obscure network that exists only if I have cable, basically. I assume maybe that channel is also on satellite. I don't know. But it's not on YouTube TV, which is what most people watch now, I think. Like, if I don't have that, you got to give me the option. You can't black me out. I can't watch it anywhere else. I'm not taking anything away from anybody. I just won't watch the game. That's what baseball can't do. You can't have it that way. We're going to talk more about the Royals and what they did on opening day. Our Royals insider, Jalen Thompson, will join us in just a little bit. Thanks to Prairie Fire Coffee for keeping us fueled up, especially those of us who had a wine tasting and maybe a little sleepy this morning. We appreciate that, Prairie Fire Coffee. Thanks so much.
Can I tell you a quick Prairie Fire Coffee story? Not really even a Prairie Fire Coffee. I mean, I was going to get coffee. I sent you this picture during the break. In our last commercial break, I went out to go get a cup of coffee here in the Odyssey building. I walk out and I'm getting a cup of coffee, and Kid from Kid and Play is just right there. Like, he's right outside of the hall. I don't know why. I know he's getting interviewed on Power 93.5 right now. I certainly was not expecting to walk out the door and there's Kid from Kid and Play and House Party right there in our lobby.
Some of the great hair of all time. That is fantastic. We'll be right back. More Sports Daily.
Oh, okay, take it easy. We're going on the air.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
All right, welcome back, everybody, to Sports Daily here on KFH on this Friday. Tommy Caster, Jacob Albrock joining us back here in just a moment. Max Power producing the program. I mentioned it before the break. I was curious why Kid from Kid and Play was in our Odyssey building. I was looking it up during the break to try to figure out, you know, like, it's unexpected, Jacob. You walk out of the studio and Kid from Kid and Play in the House Party movies just sitting right there. Apparently, he's doing a comedy show this weekend at Vorshay's Cocktail Lounge.
So I did not know he was a comedian.
I didn't know that either. So shout out to Kid Chris Reed here in Wichita doing that event. And that's why I walk out. You never know who you're going to run into in the hallways of a radio station. And
that's right.
I remember another story. This was long ago, talking about comedians. This was at another radio station. I was walking from my office to the vending machine one afternoon, and I go to the vending machine and the soda machine right next to the candy machine. There's a guy getting a soda, and I look over. It's Bobcat Goldthwait from the Police Academy movies, just like randomly right there. And I'm like, oh my God, like Bobcat Goldthwait is right next to me right now. It's just like random. What do you say? And I'm like, hey, how are you? And it's the most like normal voice. Hey, how are you? You know, he like shook my hand or whatever. And I'm like, okay, wow, okay. Not what I expected your actual voice to sound like.
I guess I just expected him for that to be his normal
voice. That's what I would have thought too. Totally caught me off guard. You never know who you're going to run into. So Kid from Kid and Play here in Wichita for a comedy show this weekend. Little extra promotion there for that show.
That's awesome. I haven't thought about that head of hair, that flat top. When I was a kid, I always wanted a flat top. Not necessarily like kids, because that's impossible for white people. But like, I wanted a flat top,
drill sergeant, type flat. Okay,
like a flat top, but a little longer than that, right? Like not like a crew cut.
Yeah, not a high and tight. Like you wanted it.
Yeah,
yeah.
Actual flat
top. You wanted your head to look like a rectangle.
Correct. And I just like it's not possible. We tried, just doesn't work. So I was always like, kid and play, I'm like, that hair is so cool.
I was kind of the opposite. I wanted my hair so badly as a kid to look like Zach Morris from Saved by the Bell. So I had my mom buy the mousse. I was putting mousse in my hair. I was parting it. I was doing all these different things to try to get the Zach Morris hair.
Did you bleach it?
I didn't bleach it. I didn't go that far. But my hair was
pretty. Did you ever go highlights?
No.
We were in the highlight era.
I didn't. My hair was pretty blonde when I was younger, so I already kind of had the blondish, you know, type hair. It got darker the older I got. But no, I never did the highlights. I never did the frosted tips. That was never part of my style.
I mean, I was a towhead blonde when I was a kid.
So was I.
But same. Got a little darker. Yeah. But I did let my sister put highlights in my hair one time in like the seventh grade. And I was like the last to the party. Everybody had already done it or tried it or whatever. It didn't look bad. It didn't look bad. It was all right.
Yeah.
It was
okay. I learned a lesson when I was a kid that, you know, you put too much mousse in your hair. It's hard to move your head as the day goes on because it's just like everything is just like stuck and hard and you can't do anything. And to this day, I don't like putting product of any kind in my hair because of my experiences with mousse as a child.
Well, I will tell you that I have to do that to my hair, to not mousse hairspray, like the cheap, not going to move hairspray is what I have to use every day. Every day I use it. And that's, you know, for being on TV or whatever, it would just be all over the place, a big old fluff ball. So I still am, you know, hair producting, even at my old age. At some point, we'll see if that hair producting turns into hair coloring. I'm getting a little of that going. Like, I just see stare at my hair and they're like, what is that? But I will embrace it as somebody. It's weird because my whole life I looked younger, like baby face. My whole life. I don't have that anymore. I'm not getting ID'd at the bar anymore. Yeah. And I'm like, I kind of miss being the baby face guy. You know, now I'm going to get all this gray hair and it's like, okay, whatever.
I just looked it up too. Speaking of feeling old, Kid from Kid and Play, he's 60. Did you realize he's 60 years old? He's 60. Way. Like, and he doesn't look like it. I mean, so that's why I looked it up. Cause I'm like, oh, he's got to be probably in his late 40s or early. No, dude is 60. So, yeah, I feel elderly.
That is wild.
Yeah.
Wild. Thanks for indulging with us here on Sports Daily for a minute. I know there are a lot of people out there right now that are listening to this show and are like, oh, I forgot about Kid and Play. That was the coolest hair ever. Man, I remember House Party. What a great movie. We're glad to take you down that memory lane.
Hey, better head out to Vorshay's Cocktail Lounge this weekend. You can see a stand-up show from Kid and Play.
I didn't know he was a comedian. Now I want to look up his stuff, right? I want to see.
Well, hey, we're going out for your birthday tomorrow night. Maybe we go see Kid from Kid and Play's comedy show.
Maybe. You know, maybe swing by Home Depot. I don't know if there'll be enough time. Like, it'll be fun. I'm turning 40 this weekend. Pour one out for me, everybody.
It's gonna be a mess. Like I'm forewarning, and you already know this.
40 going on 25.
It's gonna be a mess of a weekend, but it's gonna be fun.
It'll be fun.
Yeah,
I'll act like I'm not 40, and I'll regret it on whatever day that is. But it's okay. Tommy has informed me, by the way, as he just had a birthday, that no matter what you do on your birthday, your wife can't get mad at you. I have to tell my wife that still. I'm going to let you explain how that works to her, if you could.
Is that going to, am I going to be able to do that? Like, will that work?
Well, I am going to need you to try. I've already gotten the, I'm a little worried about your birthday party because, you know, I'm like, maybe let this be the time you cut me a little slack. And
I think she can, I think it's well within her ability as a wife, clearly to get pre-mad at you. Like, she can be mad at you now about what's going to happen. She could also probably get mad at you after, like a post-birthday, getting mad at you about what had happened, but she can't get mad at you in the moment of your birthday.
I'm going to let you explain that to her, how that works.
It's just the rules, the way that it works.
Yeah. I will need you to inform her.
You should be immune
of these rules.
Especially because, like, for me, like, it was my 39th birthday. So it wasn't a milestone birthday. And I still felt like I can't get in trouble today because it's my birthday. Yours is a milestone birthday. Like, you're turning 40. Like, if there should be any time that your wife catches you some slack and lets you just be an idiot for the weekend, this is it.
Can you write me up a note that I can deliver, please?
I'd be happy to call her. Well, you know what we should do? We should get her on the phone live and talk to her about it.
That's a terrible idea.
I think that's a great idea. Max, I've got her number.
Bad idea.
I've got her. We should do that.
Yeah, no, that's not a good idea at all. She's working, so that wouldn't work anyway.
She can answer the phone for a couple minutes.
You can go say, here's what you should do. You should go visit her at HTO today and explain to her, everybody out there listening. Like, if we could have like 200 people go through HTO and explain to my wife why I can't get in trouble tomorrow, that would be awesome. That would be well worth it. And then if she got mad at me for that little hijink, I could say, I was just trying to get people to come visit the store. You know, so hey, there you go, listeners. If you want to do me a favor on my birthday today, go by. You got a little bit of time left there while she's there, and tell her that I can't get in trouble this weekend, and tell her hi from us here at Sports Daily. All right, let's talk about the Sweet 16 games tonight. We'll have Jalen Thompson in next segment to discuss the Royals, but let's look at these games tonight, Tommy. Let's look at some bets here. We would have been pretty good yesterday, other than Texas Tech. Texas Tech kind of blew all my parlays, but otherwise I was pretty on it. You weren't on it with BYU, but we had Florida. We had Arizona covering. All right, let's look at tonight. Ole Miss, there are money line bets I like tonight. Well, it's Ole Miss. I kind of like Ole Miss on the money line. Man, I might take a swing at Michigan on the money line. 9-point dogs. Michigan's pretty dang good.
They are. They're like, really
Michigan,
good.
Michigan might be the most underseeded team in this tournament, don't you think? They rolled by Texas A&M. You might look at the UC San Diego game. UC San Diego was fantastic this year. Metrically, they were like a top 15 team. So don't look too much into that, but look into how Michigan's like been playing lately. They ran through the Big Ten tournament, right, which included almost a 20-point win over Purdue. They beat Maryland in that tournament. They beat Wisconsin in that tournament. They had games where it was a shootout. They had games where it was a defensive struggle. They blew by Texas A&M. I'm intrigued. I'm for sure taking them plus 9, and I might take them on the money line tonight.
You know, Dusty May's got them peaking at the right time, which is, you know, extremely important. And, you know, the fact of the matter is that it's a team that's been slept on in the Big Ten this entire season. I don't think that anybody really had super high expectations for what Michigan, you know, could do, at least in the tournament was, is concerned. They had a great Big Ten tournament. I mean, obviously they won the whole thing. And I think that being able to get through that juggernaut, they're battle tested for sure. That's a big reason why they've won both of their games so far in the NCAA tournament, is because they are a battle tested team with a coach who has been there before. You know, and that's, I'm a huge Dusty May fan. We've gotten a chance to, you know, watch him up close and personal over the last few years with FAU's run of brilliance and all of that against Wichita State, and just in the American in general and in the NCAA tournament. So, I mean, that was the right hire, I feel like, for sure, long term for Michigan. You know, do I think that they'll win a national championship this year? No, but I certainly think that he's got them on a path to be, to have, you know, sustained success in the postseason for sure. I wouldn't be overly shocked if they win tonight. I don't think I'm going to take them on the money line. I know I'm not taking them on the money line. I know I'm not taking them on the money line. I don't know yet. I haven't decided if I'm going to take the points. I really like
Auburn.
Might
not be good enough.
Yeah.
That might not be good enough for me. I might just take the points. Kentucky, Tennessee. I think people know I love Tennessee. I think Tennessee's awesome, and I love their coach. Mark Pope's done a really nice job at Kentucky. Really nice job at Kentucky. And how sweet will it be for Big Blue Nation if they advance to the Elite Eight and John Calipari did not? But I really like Tennessee, so I'm taking Tennessee minus 4.5 in that one. Ole Miss, Michigan State. I love Tom Izzo so much as a coach. He's one of my all-time favorites. It just, for whatever reason, doesn't feel like they're as good as their seed to me. Their path in this tournament has been fine. New Mexico gave them a test. Bryant haven't been tested yet like they'll be tested against Ole Miss. Chris Beard is also really good at what he does at this portion. I think I'm taking the points here.
I think I'm going to take the points as well. And, you know, Ole Miss has proved a lot of people wrong. It's not a traditional powerhouse in college basketball. And think about Ole Miss for a second in the, as you're stacking up the conference, as you're stacking up the SEC, and all of these teams that are at the top of college basketball, you know, got, you know, teams like obviously Auburn, Bama, others. And then you got Ole Miss that, you know, is just kind of there. Like, they don't get the attention. They don't get the respect. They don't get all of that, you know, because they've got, you know, the historically, they haven't been a powerhouse program. Chris Beard has come in and made them relevant.
But yeah, he's a powerhouse coach.
He's a powerhouse coach. Right? Like, so if, you've got a powerhouse
if
coach.
If you were
totally,
if we were taking an elite eight of coaches at this point, man, he might be in there. Like, just consistently, no matter who he's coaching, he's done it at a million different places now. We know his story. So is Tom Izzo, by the way. Tom Izzo is one of these guys, too. But Beard is really good, and I think the talent difference between these two teams probably isn't super high. And then the other one, Purdue and Houston. Boy, I'll tell you, I don't love that it's 8.5 points. I joked with this with Tim Fitzgerald yesterday. Of all the teams still playing in this tournament, I know absolutely nothing about Purdue. Not a thing. I don't know anything about this year's Purdue team.
Don't you think that's the way Matt Painter prefers it? Because when there's been a ton of hype around Purdue, they've fallen on their faces. Like with the years they had Zach Edey and everybody expected the world out of Purdue,
about them
they've fallen apart
for so long.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we've known Purdue. Like, Purdue has been the most known commodity in college basketball for like 3 years.
Yeah. But that's the Zach Edey effect.
Right. And who was there? They had a great guard that for a couple of those years too, and I can't think of his name off the top of my head. But
Braden Smith is still there. I mean, Braden Smith is there.
No, that's not what I'm thinking of. I'll remember it at some point. We were just talking about this in the office with TJ Cleland the other day, and we both we looked him up and it's like, oh yeah, that's gosh dang it. I can't think of his name. Anyway, they've been and Edie is the biggest reason, yes. But we've known about Purdue for a long time. Now we go into this year's team and I'm like, I don't know anything about Purdue. I don't think I've watched 1 second of a Purdue basketball game all year long. Haven't watched them in the tournament yet. Nothing. I know nothing about them. So when I see 8.5 points, even though Houston is my favorite team in this tournament, and I love them, and I think they're amazing, I'm like, 8.5 points in a low-scoring game, which this almost certainly is going to be low-scoring. The total on this game, Tommy, is 132.5.
Yeah.
It's low. 8.5 points is a lot there. So I'll reluctantly take Houston. I love Houston to win the game. I love Houston to win the national title. I just don't know about 8.5 points, and that has nothing to do with Houston. It has everything to do with Purdue.
I think I'm going to take Houston easily and lay those points. I think it'll be a double digit win for Houston. I mean, I think they'll be able to flex and get it done. I mean, after the high level game against Gonzaga, I know Gonzaga had disappointed at times throughout the season. They were criminally underseeded as an 8 seed or a 9 seed, whatever they were, 8 seed in the tournament. And, Houston was able to beat them, and Gonzaga looked good while doing it. I think Gonzaga's probably should have been more of like a, 4-5 seed in the tournament, talent-wise.
They just had too many losses.
And that's about where Purdue is also. I think that Houston will have an easier time, honestly, with Purdue than they did with Gonzaga. I've got the Cougars to roll.
Rick scouted him for us. He says they have good guards and a pretty good big man in Kaufman Wren. Thank you, Rick. That actually makes me like Houston. Like guard play, Houston's going to guard play better than anybody. So that's probably a strength on strength and maybe backs it up. All right, Tommy, I'm going to let you take us to break here and tell us about what you got rolling today with our Friday Fit.
Yeah, real quick before I do that, I do want to issue an apology to anybody who decided they wanted to tail my bet last night. Because I came on the show yesterday and said I liked BYU on the money line and the under. And that was wrong and even wronger. Not a good thing at all. Of course, Alabama rolls against BYU last night. And the over was way, way in play.
And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow. It's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
Then one other comment I want to get to real quick. And then we'll have Jalen Thompson. And this one more in Jalen's wheelhouse. MLB TV subber Chris, he says he would pay a little extra, $175 one time. Would you pay $25 extra on your subscription, Tommy, to watch the Royals as a part of that?
No, I'm already paying $150. Lift the blackout in Wichita. I'm already paying $150. Let me watch Royals games. I'm 3 hours away from the stadium. I shouldn't have to have two different subscriptions, one to watch all the other teams and one to watch the Royals. That's ridiculous.
That's the part that doesn't make sense. I agree with you. Now we welcome in Jalen Thompson as we transition back to baseball. Jalen, look, it's opening day. It's fine. How was it? Just give it, the vibe of everything now that we're back in the season. No more Arizona. We're back in Kansas City now.
I mean, Kansas City showed up last night for the Royals, I'd say last afternoon. 39,000 fans were in Kauffman Stadium. People were lined up since 9 o'clock in the morning, ready to tailgate and get into the building. It felt like a Chiefs game. I guess you could say that. I mean, I remember walking throughout the concourse maybe 30 minutes before the game. Lines were out the door. It was like an experience for several Royals fans to see their team back in Kansas City. Now the game, it wasn't what the Royals wanted, but you have to remember last year they started 0-2 against the Minnesota Twins and they won the third game and then they went on to the playoffs. So it's a lot of overreaction, but the Royals do have some things they need to clean up for sure.
Let's start with the positive from yesterday, Jalen. Vinny Pasquantino looks healthy. He looks good. You know, obviously that huge three-run homer. And that wasn't the only thing. He started the rally in the ninth inning also with a double. Was there anything that you saw from him that gives you any kind of concern about his health, or does he look ready to go and good and solid moving forward?
Yeah, Tommy, I think he looks pretty good. Obviously, he just hit yesterday in the DH role, so you still need to see him get onto the field and feel his position at first base. And you really don't know how well the hamstring might hold up when he's fielding his position. So the Royals are just going to continue to take it cautious with him as far as getting him treatment still and allowing him to keep taking drills at first base and just managing the hamstring until he's back to 100%. Remember, he strained the hamstring just a week ago, seven days ago. So a grade one hamstring, you want to be careful with it. But as what he did to play yesterday, I thought it was really cool to see, because that's hard trying to manage an injury and then you have opening day and you make an impact like that. And Vinny handled it well.
So he looks fine. That, you know, the middle of that was kind of where all the offensive production came from. Not a good debut for Jonathan India. If we're blaming yesterday's loss, you can blame it on Zerpa. We kind of think, though, there were too many squandered opportunities offensively. And I don't want to look at things like overreact to one game, but that is going to be like, I don't think the Royals are all of a sudden going to be a leader across baseball in home runs this year. The whole point of Jonathan India is to help manufacture those runs, and that certainly did not happen yesterday.
No, it didn't happen yesterday, but if Jonathan India was still playing in Great American Ballpark, two of those lineouts in left field would have been home runs. So, you know, it's just what you get when you play at Kauffman Stadium. It's a big park. So, but I think Jonathan India is going to hit well for the Royals this year. You know, he showed it all spring, so you know that he has the ability to do that. It's just one game. I think what really stood out to me, though, was you didn't quite get the production that you wanted out of Hunter Renfroe and MJ Melendez, and especially with Renfroe, he didn't look as what he looked like last season in the outfield as far as making a couple plays, pulling off the arm. It just wasn't a good game for him. So he's going to have to correct that if the Royals want to go further, because they're going to need him. They're going to need Melendez. They're going to need Michael Massey and the rest of the middle of that lineup to do damage.
How did you feel about the decisions from Matt Quatrero as far as the utilization in the bullpen, specifically the timing to go to Zerpa? I mentioned this at the top of the show when we were talking about the game yesterday. If it were me, my only critique on it is that after watching Cole Reagans pitch for five innings, I thought he was okay. I don't think he had elite level stuff yesterday. I don't know if I would have brought Reagans back out for the sixth inning and then go to Zerpa. I would have rather Zerpa started the inning as opposed to inheriting that runner. And then first pitch, he gives up a home run. Did you have any issue with that? And overall, how did you feel like he managed his bullpen?
Yeah, I thought that was pretty interesting that he did that too. When he had Zerpa get up, I figured that Reagans was going to be batter to batter, and I thought that Zerpa was probably going to come in for, you know, Manzardo, which he did. But the tough part about that, though, is Cole Reagans had 83 pitches. Do you allow him to continue to press forward, or is it because it's early in the season that you kind of just go to your bullpen early? They like what Zerpa can do in those spots, you know, as a guy that's aggressive, that will get after hitters. And, You look at some of the splits that Cole Reagans had against his lefty-righty splits. I understand the decision to do that, but going with Zerpa, and he gave up a hittable pitch, and, you know, he did damage. So I think that going forward, I think the Royals will continue to do that, going to Zerpa and guys like Sam Long and others in those key spots. It just didn't work out on yesterday.
So it brings up an interesting conversation then, Jalen, that we were having, and I think a lot of Royals fans will have. Jalen Thompson, Kansas City Star Royals reporter. What do you do? How, like, do you think that it will be a 7-8-9 that goes Urcig, Harvey, Estevez, or do you think Urcig is deployed a little more utility knife? And if that's the case, who is that other guy? Because either way, no matter how you look at it, like if you want to shorten the game or if you want to do it, they do have to have one more. Is Zerpa going to be looked at as that, or is Zerpa more situational?
I think Zerpa is more going to be the guy that you go in and to bridge the gap between the starters and the bullpen. I think he's going to be like probably the first or second guy up for that role. I think the guy that might be one more would be Hunter Harvey. When you look at what Hunter Harvey did, he looked really great last night. He is someone that the Royals really wanted
last deadline.
They traded for him from the Nationals, and he gave up their number two prospect at the time, Caden Wallace, and a draft position in that draft. So I think that they really like what he can do. He's back from the back strain that cost him pretty much all of 2024 when he got to the Royals. And I think that he's going to be a guy that's going to be important maybe in that eighth inning role like he came in, and Estevez probably be the ninth inning role. But that could just change depending on the matchup. But I think Urcig, like you mentioned, is going to be that guy that's going to move around. If you notice, he was the guy that came in when the Guardians' best hitters were in the lineup. It just happened to be in the seventh inning yesterday. That could be in the ninth inning on Saturday. That could be in the eighth inning on Sunday. But I think he's going to be the guy that, in the highest leverage, you're going to Lucas Urcig because of what he can do with his high velocity and fastball.
Jalen, I think the Bobby Witt Jr. effect was in full swing yesterday. I mean, the guy struck out three times, but he still impacted the game even when he wasn't having a great offensive production game. I mean, he beat out that ground ball to shortstop, and without him doing that, you don't get the Vinny Pasquantino home run. And so even when it's a down game or not a great game by his standards, he's still impacting the game in a positive way.
Yeah, and we talked to Vinny about that, and I asked him specifically about Bobby's infield hit. And he said that he walked up to the plate and he marveled at it, and then he asked Guardians catcher Bo Naylor, "Have you seen anything like that before?" And it was like, it's just insane. So it's pretty crazy to see what Bobby can do when he's able to use his speed for offensive abilities. I think that he had a 30.5 sprint speed last season that led the major leagues. And then on top of that, he worked this offseason to work on his base running ability and being more efficient. And he wants to get more steals and have those steals be more impactful in timely moments. And he did that. He stole second base, and that allowed Vinny to hit the home run. And Vinny actually mentioned it. He said that when Bobby stole second, that allowed him to be pitched differently at the plate. And he got the hanging slider and a curveball, and he hit over the fence. So I think those are things that's going to happen when you put pressure on an opposing team, that mistakes will be advantageous for Pasquantino, Vinny, Salvi, and others. You know,
I want to ask you real quick, Jalen, about all the rumors and the talk regarding the stadium location. John Sherman gave us some insight. I don't know how closely you're following that on the beat or if you're sticking to just the baseball. What is the latest, though, on the stadium and what we might see there?
Yeah, John Sherman, he met with the media on, I believe, Wednesday at the workout. And he was saying that, you know, they're still trying to find a location. They're still trying to finalize things. He said the speculation that's out there, he didn't really give it any credence. He was saying that, you know, things are just a work in progress. So we got to take him at his word for that, and we'll see where the Royals want to place the stadium. Obviously, there's a couple options that people are talking about out there. So it's just going to depend on where they feel the most comfortable putting this stadium. Is it going to be in Missouri? Is it going to be in Kansas? It's just going to be something that they have to continue to go through these negotiations. So Sherman didn't necessarily comment a lot on it, but he said that by the middle of the year, hopefully June, July timeframe, they want to have something out there to show, like, I guess, what they're thinking and where they want this thing to be. But for right now, it's just a lot of negotiations going on.
All right. We appreciate it, Jalen. Royals got to take an extra day here. They have the weather thing, so they'll play again on Saturday, a couple of day games this weekend. We'll follow along with you at Jalen Thompson on X at the Kansas City Star. We appreciate it. Next week, we'll have a little more, you know, we'll have a little more to dig through than one game that we want to overreact to, that they blew a lead and went to extra innings and they ended up. We'll have a little more to digest by the next time we talk to you.
I look forward to that. And also, we got to get you guys to a game or something. You can't be paying extra money to not watch the Royals.
I know, right?
We got to get you in person, like, so you can see it.
I'm down anytime.
Yeah, we'll come up. We'll come up. We'll say what's up. We'll, for sure. Yeah, have a hot dog. All right, Jalen, we appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
All right, that'll do it. As fun as yesterday was, today's kind of just the same. We don't have Royals baseball, but we will this weekend. You've got more Sweet 16 games. Then we get into the Elite Eight. Hey, we've got the K-State women. They're ready to roll against USC. 1-point spread. You're going to hear that game at 6:30 right here on KFH tomorrow. We'll have Shocker baseball today. By the way, they begin a series with UAB. Got to get them back on track. That's 5:45. They'll also be on tomorrow at 1:45. You'll have the Royals slide over to KNSS. So a programming note there. And then on Sunday, you get Shocker baseball on KFH and the Royals on KNSS as well. So just keep it attuned to those little programming notes and changes, Royals fans, Shocker fans. Tommy, it's going to be great. We're going to have a lot to talk about on Monday.
It's going to be awesome. A baseball weekend, college baseball, MLB, it's back. And then we got Sweet 16 and Elite Eight this weekend. It's a blast.
We'll see you Monday.